Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In this episode, my colleague, Arianna Pelosi, spoke with Dr. Arfin Dasari from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center and Dr. Kathy Eng from Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center. They discussed data that may support the FDA approval of fruquintinib as a treatment for patients with metastatic colorectal cancer. Specifically, they reviewed findings from the Phase 3 FRESCO-2 trial, in which fruquintinib met the primary endpoint of progression-free survival compared with placebo in those with refractory metastatic disease. The discussion also focused on how fruquintinib may impact the standard of care if it receives approval, as well as next steps for researching the agent in this patient population.
Just to start off, can you briefly discuss the results observed in the FRESCO-2 trial?
FRESCO-2 is a global randomized phase 3 study of fruquintinib, which is a highly selective and potent VEGF receptors 1, 2, and 3 inhibitor. The trial enrolled patients with heavily pretreated metastatic refractory colorectal cancer who were randomized 2-to-1 to fruquintinib versus placebo, both arms getting best supportive care. The primary endpoint was overall survival, and the study did meet its primary endpoint with a hazard ratio of 0.66, and that resulted in improvement in overall survival from about 4.8 months in the placebo arm to about 7.4 months in the fruquintinib arm. Progression-free survival was one of the key secondary endpoints of the trial, and there was a statistically and clinically significant improvement in the progression-free survival as well, with a hazard ratio of around 0.32. And in addition to this, the drug was very well tolerated overall, and with easily manageable adverse effects. In fact, the dose intensity in the placebo arm and the treatment arm were comparable. I think all this put together suggests that fruquintinib is well tolerated, provides meaningful survival benefit for these patients who desperately need new treatment options.
We helped design this international trial, but there was a prior trial specifically called FRESCO that was conducted in China that was specifically in the third line setting, but also because practice patterns are not similar to ours here in the United States with the continuation of bevacizumab, that was a large part of the impetus for creating a separate trial as well. And then although our trial was not specifically for third line, I do kindly remind people that we wanted to be inclusive as well. So some people will criticize that, oh, we allowed a placebo arm, et cetera. But the reality is there's no other standard of care. Once you've received Lonsurf, there would be regorafenib. Or if you receive regorafenib, there'd be Lonsurf. Or if you had received the combination. So that is one advantage to the trials. You really got to see the benefit of the drug overall. The median lines of therapy, I'm not sure if Arvin mentioned it was 4 in the final publication. And I think it's important to keep in mind that although the hazard ratio was 0.66, that's a 34% reduced risk of death if you're actually on if you're on the investigational agent for fruquintinib. And so, some people say, oh, that median is a difference, of 7 point, plus months versus 4.7 months. The reality is that there's 50% of the people, that's a median, right? So 50% of people will exceed that. So just important to keep that in mind. And it was tolerated extremely well.
So how do you think the use of fruquintinib will improve the quality of life for patients with previously treated metastatic colorectal cancer?
I think from a patient perspective, because it is an oral agent, that's a single agent, it provides increased convenience for patients, which obviously reduces probably financial stress because less time away from work, less chair time for infusions. Because it's tolerated well, it is advantageous for the patient overall in regards to quality of life. We are both we're both very familiar with regorafenib and TAS-102. TAS-102 obviously has a disadvantage of having myelosuppression, and then regorafenib, it has associated toxicities that we have to really think about when considering patients with metastatic colorectal cancer. So it has its limitations because of the hand-foot-skin reaction and the increased LFTs, et cetera.
Dr. Jasari, did you want to add anything?
I think that covers all the main points that I wanted to raise as well. I just wanted to also add that there was a formal quality of life analysis of FRESCO 2 done, and those data were presented earlier this year, overall confirming what Dr. Eng just mentioned, and that quality of life is preserved overall, and in some, using some instruments, the time to deterioration was actually better with fruquintinib as compared to placebo.
So Dr. Jasari, as you know, the PDUFA date is set for November 30th. So if this is approved, how will it help impact the standard of care?
Yeah, I mean, we've been getting a lot of inquiries and questions from patients as well as providers alike who've reviewed the data and have been really impressed and are eagerly awaiting the potential approval, given the efficacy and the good side effect profile that we've just discussed. So I do think that it'll be a standard of care for patients with metastatic colorectal cancer. As Dr. Eng mentioned, there's a body of evidence from FRESCO as well as FRESCO 2 kind of showing activity of this drug in kind of third line as well as fourth line therapy. So, so potential options in both these settings for these patients, I would say. And looking beyond just this approval, given that this drug has efficacy and is well tolerated, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of excitement around also expanding its role into perhaps earlier lines of therapy or combining it with other agents. Which has been challenging with regorafenib so far.
Dr. Eng, did you want to add anything or do you want me to move on to the next question?
You know, for our surgically unresectable patient population, we have limited treatment options. And if you really think about it, we've not had a new drug that's been approved since Lonsurf. Or TAS-102, sorry, not Lonsurf. Don't want to use that name. But I think Arvin, what did we decide? It was like 2014 or 2015, something like that. We were talking about it. I mean, it's been almost basically about almost a decade. And so we really need to find additional treatment options for your MSI stable patients. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of interest in the new drugs for KRAS G12C, although that's a rare patient population, and MSI high patients, once again, another rare patient population, and HER2, another rare patient population. But for the average MSI stable patient, we need treatment options. And I think this just gives another opportunity for them to live with good quality of life, improve their overall survival. And, you know, once again, by improving their overall survival, it really improves their own personal quality of life, as well as the capability to potentially participate in another clinical trial. So.
Great. So I know we touched on adverse effects during the results, but Dr. Eng, are there any that clinicians should be aware of or on the lookout for?
You know, hypertension is a class effect of this category of drugs, which is not surprising, and that's easily controlled with medications. Obviously, I think the one thing that we want people to be aware of is you can get a hand-foot skin syndrome, kind of similar to capecitabine, but not as severe with blisters as you would may potentially see with regorafenib. So it's not a hand-foot skin reaction, but a hand-foot skin syndrome. And we just want people aware, you know, be aware, use the emollients, stay in contact with your doctor, obviously notify your doctor if things aren't well controlled. You know, if you look at the data regarding SAEs from Fresco 2, less than 1% of all patients withdrew from the trial based due to any potential toxicity. So
Dr. Jasari, what are some current unmet needs in metastatic colorectal cancer?
Everything. I mean, that kind of, I think, is probably the best answer, in that we need more treatment options. And we are making some headway for small subsets of patients defined by molecular alterations. But all these alterations put together probably account for maybe 10-15% of the entire patient population. And even then, in the vast majority of these subsets, there is eventual development of resistance to these targeted therapies. So desperately need new therapies for these patients that are effective and well tolerated. And I think fruquintinib kind of fits that bill, and that it is an all-comer patient population, well tolerated, has efficacy. That's the most exciting takeaway from all this work, I'd say.
Dr. Ng, did you want to add anything? Or?
You know, I think the one thing I just wanted would remind people is, you know, fruquintinib is basically continuation of the role of anti-VEGF therapy in the treatment of colorectal cancer. You know, we know bevacizumab is approved in the front line, the second line, and currently bevacizumab, to receive it, you still have to go in and get your infusion over 15 or 30 minutes. So this does allow an opportunity to continue with anti-VEGF therapy in the continuum of care. And as far as we are aware, we don't know any particular molecular markers that will result in resistance to anti-VEGF therapy. Historically, all the prior clinical trials for bevacizumab, regorafenib, aflibercept, et cetera, they all did not have any positive correlative studies to suggest which patients may be more resistant than others. And unfortunately, which Arvind can attest to, we, you know, conducted this trial during the era of COVID. So we had a supply chain issue, and unfortunately we did not have the Streck tubes that we needed for distribution for our correlative work. So we don't have that data per se, but you know, I think it just demonstrates the role of anti-VEGF therapy in general. And this is a selective anti-VEGF approach.
So I'll give this question to both of you if either one of you want to start off. But moving forward, what would be the next steps for researching this drug in this patient population?
So, I mean, we've both sat through meetings with KOLs about kind of where to take this drug forward. And it was really gratifying to see the amount of excitement and the number of ideas that were generated during these meetings, kind of reflecting the good side effect profile and efficacy of the drug. Broadly speaking, I think these efforts would fall into combining fruquintinib with other agents in the refractory setting to further improve the efficacy of the drug. The second part of effort would be trying to move fruquintinib into earlier lines of therapy. Currently, it's kind of in the heavily pretreated slash refractory space. So can we move it into earlier lines of therapy as kind of the other area of focus. There are trials ongoing already, early phase trials, trying to address these questions. For instance, there is a clinical trial of fruquintinib with tislelizumab that is ongoing and awaiting the results. But so far, it seems like this drug can be combined with other drugs and regimens fairly safely. So that's exciting.
Yeah, I would agree with Arvin. We're just excited to look at the possibilities for fruquintinib in combination. I think that because the drug was originally approved in China and now there's potential for worldwide approval, it's a lot for one company to handle. And so I think that, we will continue to study hopefully various combinations and find another way to move forward to make it even more effective than it currently is. It'd be great if we could pair it with another oral agent that would be tolerated well, because that would obviously make it much easier for patients if we could continue to do so. But we'll see. It's exciting. It's another, it's a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to provide patients an FDA-approved drug. And we hope that patients will be as interested as we are in developing this drug with HUTCHMED and Takeda. So we look forward to further possibilities in the future.
And then finally, is there anything else that either of you wanted to highlight today?
We always want to encourage patients to participate in a clinical trial. The reality is, the United States, we don't have enough patients to participate in a clinical trial relative to other countries. And, people say, well, we're much slower in regards to drug development. And the reality is because we can't get patients to participate in clinical trials as well as some other countries do. That's every single drug that's been approved has required the patient to participate in a clinical trial. And sometimes, as mentioned earlier, there are some critics of the fact that it was compared to placebo, but the reality is, so was regorafenib. So was the original TAS-102 study. So it's not as if we were the only trial that emulated this. I'm sorry, that went this route. We basically emulated what already existed, which is because there is no other standard of care if you're looking at the refractory patient population. And sure, we would like to see more trials pursued in the frontline or second line setting. But of course, that requires significant financial support. And not all companies that are smaller are able to do a large clinical trial in the frontline setting because of financial constraints. And in the second line setting, it's challenging to enroll to just because a lot of practitioners in the community are very comfortable with utilizing standard systemic chemotherapy in the second line setting. So that makes enrollment much more challenging for us as clinical researchers. So we often continue to possibly look at investigational agents in the third line setting. But regardless, we need patients to participate in clinical trials, and we need investigators or providers to enroll to clinical trials because without their enrollment, we cannot be successful in academic institutions. We are a small component of the research world, and we need our private practice, community practice colleagues to support us and also partner with us on clinical trial enrollment. It's really critical to try to advance the field.
Dr. Desari, did you want to add anything else? Or?
Oh, just kind of to reiterate what Dr. Eng mentioned about the huge unmet need for clinical trials, highlighting our own experience with FRESCO-2. As she just mentioned, this was done right smack in the middle of COVID, an unprecedented pandemic that the world had never seen. Even then, between August of 2020 and December of 2021, which is when the enrollment happened, we screened over 900 patients for the trial and enrolled close to 700 patients. So just gives you an idea of how much of an unmet need this is and how well trials can enroll if designed thoughtfully.
I do want to say one more thing, and maybe I'm sure Arvin would agree. We want to make sure people understand that this is not just another Me Too agent. This is not another regorafenib. This is not another bevacizumab. This is a different type of agent that is oral, that has activity as a single agent, and is very selective in regards to the targets for VEGF receptors 1, 2, and 3. So we also want to make sure that people understand that. in regards to some of the criticisms or for those out in the community that may not be familiar with the mechanism of action as well.
All right, great. Thank you so much for both joining me today.
Thank you so much, Ariana, for your time.
Yeah, I hope you both have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.